Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. You get more details about the raid that occurred at Mar-a-Lago, President Trump's residence, on Monday evening. Well, actually, Monday all day. It took about 9 hours.
Yeah, they started in the morning and finished in the dark of night. And they had long guns drawn, too. Did you see that?
The boxes that the FBI took contained documents and mementos from the presidency, reportedly including letters from Obama and Kim Jong-un. Rocket Man. And other correspondence with world leaders. This is according to Miranda Devine, writing at the New York Post.
Okay.
A legal source said the boxes had been packed up by the General Services Administration, shipped to Mar-a-Lago when Trump left office. Trump's attorneys, led by Evan Corcoran, had been cooperating fully with federal authorities on the return of documents to the National Archives. In May, Corcoran granted access into Mar-a-Lago's windowless storage room to FBI agents who spent several hours, searching through the boxes. Trump stopped by the basement to say hello at one point, according to someone who was there.
I didn't think you had basements in Florida, but maybe you do.
Despite that, that's May, so that's, you know, more than 2 months ago.
And then they were back in June.
So,
and they were very cooperative, and they even wrote a letter. The investigators seeing how cooperative it's been. So why not just issue a subpoena instead of a warrant?
They turned over 15 boxes of stuff. They were cooperating, apparently welcoming the FBI in. And Trump, you know, going right up into the point of getting them, you know, glasses of Country Time lemonade to sit on the porch and chat after they're done searching through his documents and mementos. And yet we have the 30 agents to send on his residence on Monday night.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can also text us at 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Ari Fleischer, a former W spokes being, was on with Hannity last night, and he sort of reiterated what we reported he tweeted out the other day.
This is how this is going to end. There's only two possibilities here. One is they got the goods, they found a smoking gun, and they're going to indict the president. Or Merrick Garland, the attorney general, and Christopher Wray are going to have to resign in disgrace or get impeached after Republicans take the Congress. There is no in between.
Yeah. I mean, they don't. If this isn't airtight, nailed down with something, they are destroyed.
And the question, of course, then is, well, if they've got a smoking gun, you mean they've got a smoking gun finally and nobody knows about it? Nobody knows what it is or has any idea? This is related to classified information. That, I mean, we don't know if this is some sort of backdoor fishing expedition related to January 6th or something else. There have been so many offshoots of investigating Trump. I mean, who knows? But if it's a fishing expedition, then you don't have a smoking gun by definition.
Right.
And if you have a smoking gun, or you think you're going to get one, and no one in the D.C. press corps seems to have any idea what that would look like, seems implausible to me.
Peter Doocy from Fox News tried to get some answers yesterday.
Is this administration weaponizing the Justice Department and the FBI opponents?
Peter, the president believes in the rule of law. the president believes in the independence of the Department
of
Justice?
That's a yes or no.
It's a yes or a no for you. I'm answering the question. You may not like it, but I'm answering the question. I'm answering the question, and I'm telling you that we are not going to comment on a criminal investigation. The president has been very clear. I laid out what his thoughts were back on January 7th in 2021 about how he saw the Department of Justice. And I'm just going to leave it there. We're not going to comment from here, from this White House, on a criminal investigation that is currently happening.
And she was asked 11 questions on the topic and pretty much said the same answer. And then came out and said, Dan, that the White House and President Biden knew nothing about this.
So the point is, I don't want to hear from some marginally conscious White House spokesman. You want to hear from the shot callers. So starting with Merrick Garland, and it was interesting that the choice that the administration made and that the Attorney General made, which was to essentially offer no comment and then trot that dingbat out to just repeat no comment.
And Biden had a thing about chip making companies yesterday, and people asked him constantly, would not respond at all. Would not say a word about it.
I know we had a little discussion at the end of the show yesterday with, I think his name is Steve from Glencoe. Pretty said he was a prosecutor for 18 years and sort of defended the choice that the Attorney General made. Perhaps with the advice and consent of the big guy, perhaps not. We don't know. But, of course, can't trust Joe Biden because, he lies. He's a liar. Lies all the time. Dershowitz, Alan Dershowitz, writing at The Hill, defenders of the raid argue that the search warrant was issued by a judge. Yet every criminal defense lawyer knows that search warrants are issued routinely and less critically than candy is distributed on Halloween. Judges rarely exercise real discretion or real supervision. It may be different when a president's home is the object of the search, but only time will tell whether that was the case here. Neutral, objective justice must not only be done, it must be seen to be done. Yeah. For zealous Trump haters, anything done to Trump is justified. For zealous Trump lovers, nothing done to him is ever justified. For the majority of moderate, thoughtful Americans, however, the Justice Department's raids likely seems, at least at this point in time, to be unjust or needlessly confrontational. So why would they risk it? This is what we poured over a bit yesterday, and so is everybody else.
Why
would they risk it?
Why?
Are they, completely tone deaf? Or is it that they want Trump and or that they want him to go away? They're trying to prevent him or they want him. And I think my position is that's actually a false choice. It's both. They want him around. And you see evidence of this with the involvement of the New Marxists in gubernatorial and Senate primaries around the country to get the Trump-backed candidate, generally speaking. They want him front and center in the midterms. That puts the focus away from the big guy and his many failings.
Right.
Where we are as a country economically with respect to physical security, particularly in big cities and everything else.
Takes attention off the Inflation Reduction Act.
So keep him, right, keep him here. Keep him. We want him to be the nominee in 24. Because he's the most polarizing, and so he gives us the best chance. And it'll be about him rather than our record with our, with our party's leader as the president. And then we deal the death blow politically to Trump in 24. We defeat him on our terms, and we send a message that to Trump supporters, the deplorables, the insurrectionists, Trump supporters. Don't ever try that again, as I said yesterday. You can't win.
Shut up.
You cannot win. You cannot beat us.
When they hate us with the heat of 1,000 suns.
And
also, too, the warrant was issued on the anniversary that Richard Nixon resigned from office. Coincidence?
Okay.
you know, me about my timing.
Are you going to start doing Lincoln's secretary was named Kennedy and Kennedy's secretary was named Lincoln?
No.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's so bad that even Mike Pence is defending Trump in a tweet.
Mike Pence is not averse to defending Trump.
No, and he said, I share the deep concerns of millions of Americans over the unprecedented search of the personal residence of President Trump. No former president of the United States has ever been subject to a raid on their personal residence in American history. And even Cuomo, former Governor Andrew Cuomo, defended him, too. And that the DOJ must immediately explain the reason for its raid.
Maybe
Cuomo coming over to the...
Nipple Rings Gambino is going to switch parties. John in Naperville.
Yeah, you know, the National Archives is the one that started this. They wanted their 15 boxes back. The general office packed those boxes. The FBI knew where the boxes were. Why did the FBI have to go in there with 30 people? And they walked in there with backpacks, go there unsupervised, throughout the whole house where they knew where the stuff was. And if people think that they find a smoking gun, it's not planted, they're crazy.
Yeah,
that's what I was worried about.
Call,
I mean, because who trusts the FBI anymore? They're not planting evidence. I hope they don't do that.
They're just, more guardians of our democracy. I'm sure that's what we'll be told. I thought that was interesting. The Epoch Times had this one. A fundraising offer to support progressive causes. Every but her emails, hat, or shirt sold helps Onward Together partners defend democracy, build a progressive bench, and fight for our values. That's a picture of Hillary Clinton with a hat that says, but her emails. This is just after this was just posted yesterday. So the point is that they're mocking their stooges at the FBI, past and present. But her emails. Oh, isn't that what they're saying? But her emails. What about the treatment of Hillary? They're mocking their stooges at the FBI. And also anyone gullible enough to believe the law applies to people like Hillary Clinton.
And who's this judge that signed the warrant? Because Fox News was saying that he was an Obama donor and he was on Jeffrey Epstein's team there in Palm Beach.
Yeah, he donated to Obama's presidential campaign, and he left the local U.S. attorney's office in Florida, wherever he was in Florida, to represent employees of convicted pedophile Epstein who had received immunity in the sex trafficking investigation into him. That's Judge Bruce Reinhardt. Okay. And? I mean, it's bizarre, but you have to...
You can't write a Hollywood script like this.
Well, I mean, it's bizarre that you have an Epstein connection to the judge that issued the warrant. But
they all lived in the same town.
But, I mean, I don't know where to go with that. Other, you know, he's doing criminal defense work when he leaves the U.S. Attorney's office. That's unusual. Mike in Plano.
Hey, guys. You know, one thing I saw that was very interesting yesterday, and it's a sure sign that the Democrats and other Trumpers are really scared about this backfiring on them badly, is, Amy, you mentioned the tweet by Andrew Cuomo. I saw that yesterday, and that surprised me, but... another one I saw yesterday was a tweet by Michael Steele, who I'm sure you guys know, the former RNC head who became an MSNBC Democrat. But and he's another never-Trumper. But anyway, he put out a tweet telling people not to call it a raid anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And call it an executed search warrant.
Yeah.
Whatever jingo jango. I'm like, why? I mean, this is supposed to be your guys' moment. The walls are closing in. Take full advantage of it. Don't stop now, boys, as Hawk Harrelson would say.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mike.
And the rest of Cuomo's tweet, though, real quick. He said DOJ must immediately explain the reasons for its raid, and it must be more than a search for inconsequential archives, or it will be viewed as a political tactic.
Oh, that's just obvious.
And undermining any future credible investigation.
If only he had such command of the obvious when he was governor of New York.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show
is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
AM 560, The Answer. See the world premiere of Uncle Tom 2 on August 25th. Get your tickets at 560theanswer.com/movie.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, talking about the fallout from the raid at Mar-a-Lago. I'm sorry, the execution of a judge-signed search warrant. Right. Redefine recession, redefine raid, redefine man, woman. I know they're in the redefinition business. President Trump, one of the things that it did, moved up President Trump's rolling out of his virtually his campaign announcement video. This is what he posted after the raid on Monday night, or after the FBI finally left on Monday night.
We are a nation in decline. We are a failing nation. We are a nation that has the highest inflation in over 40 years, where the stock market just finished the worst first half of a year in more than five decades. We are a nation that has the highest energy cost in its history, and we are no longer energy independent or energy dominant, which we were just two short years ago. We are a nation that is begging Venezuela and Saudi Arabia for oil. We are a nation that surrendered in Afghanistan, leaving behind dead soldiers, American citizens, and $85 billion worth of the finest military equipment in the world. We are a nation that allowed Russia to devastate a country, Ukraine, killing hundreds of thousands of people, and it will only get worse. We are a nation that has weaponized its law enforcement against the opposing political party like never before. We've never seen anything like this. We are a nation that no longer has a free and fair press. Fake news is about all you get. We are a nation where free speech is no longer allowed, where crime is rampant like never before, where the economy has been collapsing, where more people died of COVID in 2021 than in 2020. We are a nation that is allowing Iran to build a massive nuclear weapon and China to use the trillions and trillions of dollars it's taken from the United States to build a military to rival our own. We are a nation that over the past 2 years is no longer respected or listened to all around the world. And we are a nation that is hostile to liberty and freedom and faith. We are a nation whose economy is floundering, whose stores are not stocked, whose deliveries are not coming, and whose educational system is ranked at the bottom of every list. We are a nation that in many ways has become a joke. But soon we will have greatness again. It was hardworking patriots like you who built this country, and it is hardworking patriots like you who are going to save our country. There is no mountain we cannot climb. There is no summit we cannot reach. There is no challenge we cannot meet. There is no victory we cannot have. We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield. Ever, ever, ever. We will never give in. We will never give up. And we will never, ever back down. We will never let you down. As long as we are confident and united, the tyrants we are fighting do not stand even a little chance. Because we are Americans, and Americans kneel to God and God alone. And it is time to start talking about greatness for our country again.
Yeah, that's about as close as to an announcement video as you can get without actually announcing.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. I have always said, you know, I appreciate what Trump has done with the appointments he made to the Supreme Court, with reducing rules for small businesses, but I didn't want him to run again. But now I want him to run again, which is... because of what happened to him. I just, you know, after two impeachments, and they're constantly on him, trying to get him to shut up, that it's making me want him to speak up.
Well, we'll see, you know, what they have at some point in time. I assume in the not too distant future, but, you know, who knows with these things. The Hunter Biden investigation never really goes. All these investigations are ships with that will never find a port.
Right.
Hunter Biden investigation sort of open-ended. The Durham investigation, remember that one?
Oh, yeah, that guy.
I know we still have the Danchenko prosecution before us, but, you know, that seems to be meandering to a quiet ending at some point in the indeterminate future. This investigation, per the raid, you know, I mean, part of this is, I mean, if it was political, it was a political shot called by Garland and or the big guy. If that's all this was, and this is, again, prompting Trump to get into the race, prompting the sort of backlash from those inclined to be supportive of Trump, like you, Amy, then it achieved the goal. Make sure that he's front and center now and in 2024, and then we'll, as I said, deal with him once and for all in 2024. But for now, we think that our political interests are having him be front and center for the midterms and the 2024 presidential. So it accomplished that. And, you know, it muddies things up and it inspires the base. Finally, this guy that we hate is going to be put in an orange jumpsuit, which is literally the question or the statements that are being made on MSNBC and CNN when they're not redefining what a raid is. So I don't know. It checks a lot of boxes for the new Marxists politically. And, you know, you muddy them up, and if anything comes of it, if nothing ever comes of it, perhaps a better way to say it, then, you know, we had a basis for it. We got the judge to sign the warrant. We were worried about mishandling classified information. We got some, I mean, it would have to be relatively new information. That's what they'd at least have to represent to the court. It couldn't be information they'd been sitting on, and then they just decided to go. They had to present this case that there are exigent circumstances, the mishandling of classified information, some sort of information in his possession that we just learned of, and this is what is prompting this request for a search warrant and the need to send 30 FBI agents over to his place.
It's so hyperbolic. I mean, they could have just issued a subpoena. This is just a look at me and look what we're doing to him. That's why it's politically charged. And the president decides what a presidential record is. That's what I learned from his attorney, Christina Bob, who was at the she was at the raid.
Yeah, well, we mentioned that yesterday. This is Article 2 power is to determine what is classified and what is not classified up until he leaves office.
Okay.
So, but that doesn't mean that you get to retain classified information post-presidency. They're separate issues. However, this is why the Records Act has always, you know, for the most part, other than when Sandy Berger is trying to take documents out in his underwear, why this is a matter of sort of process and working with through attorneys. This is, you know, technically under the law, you could be sentenced to 5 years in prison. Guess what? If this is mishandling of classified information or having something in his possession that he should have turned over back in May or June when the FBI was around, Sandy Berger concealed documents to try to get them out, and he got a misdemeanor and probation. This isn't it's inconceivable if all they have is something associated with the retention or mishandling of classified information that you're talking about jail time. So then what are you talking about? Jim in Port Charlotte, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
No, thanks for taking my call. So as a former motorcycle club member, I've seen the corruption in the FBI 30 years ago, the entrapment, the infiltration. Anybody with an IQ above 50 knows the Republicans aren't going to do a damn thing if they're all put in power in November. Okay? You know, in my opinion, the only thing that's going to change what's going on in this country, you probably don't like to hear this, but people like Pritzker and Mitch McConnell, the only thing that's going to end this is when they all get the Benito Mussolini treatment. Or maybe if Mark Levin writes another book, that'll save us. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's gone on for way too long. It's never going to change.
Hey, Jim.
I have no confidence.
Well, just an aside. So motorcycle club, like Sons of Anarchy type motorcycle club, or like what kind of motorcycle club?
I'm not going to mention their name on the air. I'll give you the acronym O-N-L, and they're the largest motorcycle club on the planet next to the Angels.
Yeah, okay.
So,
all right. I got it.
You know, I left there a while ago, and I've seen it firsthand and lost a lot of friends to these scumbags in the FBI. So, in any event,
thanks for the call.
Nothing's going to change in this country.
Thanks for the call, Jim. I mean, I understand the cynicism because when Republicans did have control there, what sort of reckoning was there for the FBI's meddling in the 2016 election and then the Russian collusion, the 3 years of out of
that
his 4 year
time,
presidency
yeah.
of Russian collusion silliness. A lot of hearings, a lot of fun exchanges with Trey Gowdy or Jim Jordan, where people like Comey were put on the spot and McCabe and excoriating people and inspector generals writing reports about mistakes that were made, professional duties that were abrogated. But of course, nothing was ever intentional, whether it was Hillary Clinton's people at state or Jim Comey's people at FBI. So, yeah, the track record of Republicans holding people to account is they're all, you know, beating the lecterns right now saying we're going to investigate the DOJ if and when we gain control of the House and or Senate come November and, you know, effectively January. Yeah, I understand the skepticism. I think it's warranted. You know, we like to chant, lock her up. They like to get busy pursuing it by any means necessary. Big difference. Mark and Rochelle.
Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch, but you wonder if they just want to create some doubt in voters with the optics of this raid. Does it create some damage? You know, just the fact that someone is raided by the FBI and people that actually believe that they have a justified reason for it, is that do they leave it out there long enough to create doubt in the voters' minds for the midterms for anybody he supports or endorses?
Yeah, I mean, well, right. Thanks for the call, Mark. I mean, I think that's the part about it, him being front and center. And yeah, you know, it's funny. Even a lot of people who are otherwise skeptical, they fall prey to this. You know, you see, we've talked about this before, a hit piece in the New York Times on Tucker Carlson or whoever. You're like, oh, the New York Times. I don't pay attention to the New York Times, what they have to say. I don't trust the New York Times. Did you see the hit piece on Tucker Carlson, the New York Times?
Oh my God,
I can't believe he did this, and I can't believe he did that. Wait a second. I thought you didn't trust the New York Times. But they do a hit piece on somebody, and all of a sudden it's like you're sort of drawn to it, moths to a flame. People just did the same thing with this sort of stuff. Oh, I don't trust the FBI. I don't think the FBI is politicized and has no credibility. Oh, did you see they raided Trump's house? He must have done something wrong. Well, wait a second.
And half of Americans, or probably even more of that, will never even know or care to look what was inside the boxes. They just know Trump, Orange Man, bad. He must be because they raided his house. And they look so sinister. They had the long guns and their, you know, bulletproof vests on. Surprised they didn't do what they do with Roger Stone. I brought a tank in. Remember that?
Jordan in Forest Park.
Yeah, you know, I think a simple question for the Attorney General, and he will be asked this question at some point, is a real simple one. Did you recover, as a result of the raid, the items that were the basis for the search warrant? Very simple. And why was that necessary, you know, the follow-up, and why couldn't it have been a subpoena? And just leave it at that and let him respond.
Yeah, here's the response you're going to get. I can't comment on an ongoing investigation. Thanks for the call, Jordan. I mean, they're good questions, fair questions. They're trying to be as probing, knowing the boundaries you're up against as you can be. You know, we're not asking you to disclose anything. We're not asking you to disclose the nature of it and so on and so forth. Just generically tell us. But I'm you know, it's really something to take this much of an imperious approach to something that was and is unprecedented, which is to say nothing.
Nothing.
Out that dope KJP to say no comment.
We can't comment on impending investigations.
Wow.
And then Trump again, I'm not Trump, Biden was asked different ways so many times yesterday at his press conference, and nope, didn't say a word.
Vin, St. Charles.
Good morning, guys. I think after President Trump, who else could take all this abuse? And he's the man who's bringing, he's like a volcano. We know it's ready to explode. And the corruption is there. And now he's bringing it to the surface. And now you see it to yourself. And like a previous caller said, it's there. And now people have to see it. If you don't wake up, it's too late. This is the time to stop the corruption or to at least try with President Trump. He's the man. I'm sorry, or DeSantis. But that's it. After that.
Thanks, Vince. Frank, Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. Well, you know, one of the problems I have with Trump's little speech or whatever you want to call it, his message is he kept saying, we are a nation. We're not a nation. A nation is a group of people who have common cultural characteristics that, you know, share some sort of, you know, views on the world. Are we a nation? I don't think so. What do we have in common with so many with the other side? They don't believe in the Constitution. They don't believe in our holidays. They don't believe in much of anything that we agree with. We're not a nation anymore. We're Austria-Hungary, 1913. That's what we are. We're very Balkanized and very polarized. And it's one more comment. It's really sad what's happened to the Justice Department. That department was created in like 1870, 71 under President Grant to basically enforce some of the enforcement acts that the Congress had passed regarding various different laws and so forth. They have really come down with these actions that they have taken. So those are my comments.
Thanks, Frank.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The end.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Historian Craig Shirley said of the raid on Mar-a-Lago, "This is without a doubt one of the biggest days in American history. You can't minimize it. No president, not even Richard Nixon, did this to political enemies." Which prompts the question, sort of a two-prong question.
Okay.
One, should we get rid of the FBI, which is a topic we've covered before, actually for a couple of few years now. And if we should, how do we do it? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Good piece from our friend Adam Mill, who is an attorney, writing over at amgreatness.com. And he takes us back to Truman. Nothing new in this world, just the history we don't know. Actually, it was Harry Truman who said that, or is credited for having said it. And he provides a good example of it. You want to talk about the FBI meddling in elections, as they have the last two. You go back to 1948, when they tried to throw the election to Truman's challenger. Dewey wins, remember the Tribune?
Yeah. I remember the headline.
I'm sure you were there.
I was there.
Yeah.
I was on the printing press. Yeah. I'm like, wait, stop.
Stringer for the Tribune
back
in the day.
How'd you know?
They leaked to Thomas Dewey information about Truman's relationship with Kansas City machine boss Tom Pendergrast. They were meddling in the 1948 election. And Truman had much to say about the FBI that rings true today. We want no Gestapo or secret police. FBI is trending in that direction. 70 years ago, they are dabbling in sex life scandals and playing blackmail when they should be catching criminals. He wrote of Hoover, J. Edgar. Hoover would give his right eye to take over, and all congressmen and senators are afraid of him. And Adam Mill makes the point, building off of what Truman said. FBI's access to vast national security databases, its willingness to abuse them and spy on Americans, pretty powerful psychological deterrent to politicians seeking to challenge the FBI. So how do we get rid of them? I mean, in theory, if you want to just like do this like a grade school civics class, well, Congress could just defund them and shutter the agency. But of course, that's more complicated for the reason just mentioned and other reasons. And as Mill points out, I think correctly, the new Marxists who now have a fondness for the FBI as a tool against their political enemies, and a lot of establishment Republicans don't appreciate or don't want to acknowledge the threat that the FBI poses in its current form to the Republic, frankly. So the how to do it, you just defund them. Right. Okay. But if you can't do that, you can start reining them in. And as, in terms of Republican takeover, assuming that everything goes as is currently projected, Republican takeover of Congress. Instead of hearings for the purpose of getting YouTube clips that you can use to send home and fundraise off of, do some specific things to rein them in. And Adam Mill has some suggestions. With respect to the ability to intimidate politicians, one solution might be to demand of political candidates a pledge to publicly disclose any attempt by any member of the FBI to gain leverage over that politician. Although the reason they have leverage is because you don't want to publicly disclose that. But the other part of it, he writes, suggests the FBI should be required to register and report to the Justice Department's Office of Inspector General any contact with a political candidate, his family, an elected official, or a journalist. So they can't behave anonymously, leaking things or, as Truman pointed out, blackmailing or, to be more polite, leveraging politicians who ostensibly have oversight responsibilities. And also provide specific professional duties, reporting duties to FBI agents so that at least they could lose their jobs if it's learned that they didn't comply with that reporting requirement by contacting a journalist or a politician or a politician's family member and not disclosing. That's one suggestion. He also points out, you know, these are some basic things. But, you know, they're important. And so, because they're basic, they should be relatively easy to remedy if there's the political willpower to do so. You know, under FOIA, a request for information made of any government shall be processed 20 business days, which is, you know, 30 calendar days. And the FBI just stonewalls, as a lot of agencies do. In a typical case, the FBI claimed it could not produce records of its surveillance of civil rights activists for 17 years. Both DOJ and the FBI have intentionally structured their FOIA systems to fail to keep up with the public demand for records. This should be forbidden. Congress should force both agencies to provide resources and staffing to meet statutory deadlines for document disclosure. 17 years? Also, the one more, I'll take some calls on it. The under investigation secrecy. Mill writes, too often the FBI has held open an investigation into a matter of public interest while leaks aligning with the FBI's interest continue to crop up in sympathetic media. You please see the Russian collusion hoax, right? After 6 months' allowance of such secrecy, the FBI should be required to seek approval from the local U.S. attorney to certify the legitimacy of the continued secrecy. After a year, ongoing confidentiality should be required, should require approval from the attorney general himself. When the FBI does close a matter, it should notify the target in writing so he may combat the negative publicity the FBI generated in the first place. And if it turns out the FBI, that an FBI agent leaked details of the investigation to the press, the entire privilege should be waived for the remainder of the investigation. If the FBI can leak some of the details, the public should get all of the details. I like that. The other thing I like about this, and maybe this is too, you know, this is too much mechanical work here, but that's, you know, this is the machinery of freedom or the lack thereof that we're talking about. But I like folding other people in. So if there is something illicit going on, okay, after 6 months of secrecy, now you have to have the local U.S. attorney sign off. So now the local U.S. attorney has to decide if he wants to be part of something that he finds fishy. And then you have, after another 6 months, you have to go to the attorney general himself. And now the attorney general needs to decide if he wants to be part of something fishy. I like the layering and forcing more people into knowledge of what's going on and approval of what's going on so that more people are being held responsible if they're participating in something that runs afoul of either the law or their professional duties or just our cultural norms. That's a pretty good one, too. Bill and Glen Ellen, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I think the rallying cry for 2022 and 2024 needs to be ending the Democrat Party police state, because that's what they're trying to enact here through the IRS, the FBI, the Department of Justice. And the problem I see with what that guy is proposing is, so you've got the FBI doing a secret investigation, and so they rope in the U.S. attorney, Kim Fox, and then they go to Merrick Garland.
She's not a U.S. attorney. She's a Cook County State's attorney. They'd have to.
Who's been elected twice, by the way? They'd have to let people know.
They'd have to rope in John Lausch, and that's a different thing. For example, if it was a Northern District of Illinois matter.
Yeah, but I mean, it goes. We know it goes so much deeper than just the FBI, and I mean,
I understand
the entire Department of Justice needs, you know, but you know what they could do? What would help? Being able to sue individual FBI agents for if they get caught. You know how they want to take away the police department's immunity from being sued?
Yeah.
We do that to the FBI so that they have personal, you know. That might be the only way to do it, because the government will protect its own, especially under the Democrats. So if a citizen is wronged by the FBI and they can sue the individual agents, that would put skin in the game for those agents to not step across that line, maybe.
Well, thanks for the call, Bill. Yeah, I mean, it's complicated. I mean, it's the same reason it's complicated for local police, because you just invite so much frivolous litigation.
But and, litigation isn't frivolous. Like the Parkland parents, the Parkland High School, they sued the FBI and won because they had information about
We're talking about individual agents. We're not talking about the agency as a whole and whether or not you have individual agents who have responsibility to provide for their own defense. In other words, they're not protected under the color of the agency. That's a different thing, which is the same thing we're talking about with local police. Yes, of course, Stephen Hatfill, the guy who was wrongly accused of being the anthrax, the sender of anthrax. I mean, he sued the FBI and got like $5 million. Of course. I mean, they're not completely immune to civil litigation and compensation for wrongdoing. When you get into holding the individual agents personally liable, that's a different matter, and that's a little bit more complicated. But I get the point. And I take the point of, I mean, part of this would be if you had, and this is just a leadership question because it's a willpower question. You know, again, you had how many IG reports, DOJ IG reports from Horowitz have we gone through in the Comey era in the last 4 years documenting the wrongdoing by FBI agents, by senior leadership like McCabe, like Comey, and then there's no disciplinary action taken within the agency. That's a problem. And also, frankly, a slap on the wrist for things like falsifying evidence that's presented to get surveillance approval, like Kevin Kleinsmith did with respect to Operation Crossfire Hurricane. And, you know, and slaps on the wrist. I mean, you know, that's problematic, too. I mean, so to Bill from Glennon's point, there are a lot of things that are problematic about this, but let's start making positive steps where we can. And by the way, Mill talks about those DOJ reports. The when it refers to these cases for prosecution, the inspector general, the vast majority of bad actors are not prosecuted. The case of former U.S. gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar being one example, mm-hmm. where those agents were not prosecuted.
He had access to so many more women because they dragged their feet and did nothing on that investigation.
And this is why the Justice Department has a pejorative nickname, the Department of Just Us.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, hi-oh. But that's what's taking hold. That's what we understand, you know, the multiple tiers of justice in this country. Congress should pass legislation requiring the appointment of special counsel to investigate and prosecute FBI and DOJ personnel credibly accused of criminal misconduct. I agree. It has to be farmed out. They have shown they are unwilling to do it internally. I agree with that as well. So, I mean, there's some positive recommendations here that could that may be something Republicans would want to take up if they're in control and drive a conversation that if they see politicians serious about reining them in, meaning FBI, DOJ, then maybe they'll start to straighten up and fly right a little bit more. Again, it's going to be incremental. It's not going to be seismic. It's in large part a cultural problem within these agencies, but you start to change the culture when you start to limit the extent of their power. Mike in Northwest Indiana.
Morning, guys. A couple of quick points. One thing that really is discouraging me is it seems to me that half the population of the United States, roughly, is in favor of a totalitarian state as long as it's in their favor. The other thing is I don't trust politicians to clean up their act at all. I think the Republicans look at this mess as jealously as, boy, I can't wait till we can pull these levers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to take down convention of states. You've got to back up the truck, get rid of the – when Trump gets back in office, cut – the top layers off of all the Washington bureaucracies and go from there. It's just, I don't have any faith in that. The absolute power for permanently is just too much temptation for politicians to resist. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah. I mean, there is that problem of 40% of the country essentially are sentimental barbarians who believe that the ends justify the means and that you should be able to do anything that you have access to do against somebody with whom you disagree. I mean, that is a real problem, that there are no restraints that should be imposed on going after somebody with whom you disagree, which is essentially their position. That's a problem. That's not exactly consistent with the rule of law. Mike and Elgin.
Yeah, the FBI has been crooked for years. Remember the Randy Weaver case where Lon Horiucci shot Randy Weaver's wife in the face? You know, he used Jerry Spence to, for the lawsuit against him. But if you remember that case, the FBI was trying to infiltrate a group that Randy Weaver was beaten with and up in the mountains and, wanted Randy Weaver to saw off a shotgun for him. So then they could have an informant, then they could be compromised to be have an informant in the group. But you also remember the shooting in that Christmas party in San Diego where there was the early reports where there was three shooters that shot up that party. And what happened? They only found two. Well, the third guy was probably an FBI informant. And the same thing happened in Oklahoma City where there was two people that were reported in that Ryder truck. Remember the early reports where there was that FBI all-outs bulletin for a guy with dark hair and a mustache. And there was a local guy, from a farmer from Oklahoma, that was on the grand jury that heard it. And he knew people that personally saw McVeigh in that U-Haul. The guy's name was Heidi Hoppelberg. And they kicked him off the grand jury because he insisted that he needed to know who the guy was in the U-Haul truck, which was probably another FBI informant.
Well, okay, all right. We're a little far afield. But, all right, Mike, I take your point about Randy Weaver and Ruby Ridge. I take that point. The whole Oklahoma City thing is a different kettle of fish. But the issue of transparency that Adam Mill brings up, I mean, it certainly goes in terms of application to January 6th. You can't tell us where ongoing investigation. This is where those approvals that were suggested matter. This is where if you're going to leak stuff to the press, then you have to disclose everything. So we're more than a year and a half after January 6th, and you can't tell us whether or not there was an FBI footprint at the Capitol that day. You can't tell us why Ray Epps was America's Most Wanted and then he's not, despite what the video evidence that we have of his incitements. You can't just not answer questions while you're prosecuting, in this instance, hundreds of Americans, detaining and prosecuting hundreds of Americans. You don't just get to not answer questions until you feel like it, when Americans have a right to know and people's constitutional rights are at issue. So I like some of what Adam Mill is laying down there in that piece. Text from 847. This is a DOJ and Biden White House call, not FBI. Why focus on the guys who did the raid? It's who approved the raid. Am I missing something? Why do you think this is a repeat of Comey-type rogue stuff as opposed to Biden-Garland? Well, number one, we're not just focusing on the FBI. We're talking about the FBI here because I don't think there's any real serious discussion of disbanding the Department of Justice altogether.
No.
So that's number one. Number two, the FBI's storied history, both over the last 70 years and recently, make it a particular focus. Number three, it goes in both directions. So the FBI is working these cases and they get this request potentially, I'm making suppositions here, from National Archives, and then they go up the food chain to Garland, and Garland green lights it, and perhaps he checks with the White House, perhaps he doesn't. We don't know. Do I believe that Biden knew about this? I think it's more likely than not that he knew about it, maybe even green lighted it, but we don't have evidence of that. But,
and they deny it. They say, yesterday.
Well, of course they deny it. Of course
times.
They didn't.
Oh, no, Biden knew nothing about it. The White House knew
we
nothing
found out
about
it the way everybody else did
by
hearing about it on TV.
We're
calling. What do you mean? We're calling for Garland to have to present himself and explain himself.
They can't just let this, slide over home plate. I mean, they have to respond at some point in time.
But the rogue FBI, the rogue FBI stopped being rogue when Comey gave way to Ray? It doesn't appear so. You just have, I mean, and speaking of the rogue FBI, I mean, you got a whistleblower letter sent to Chuck Grassley about two FBI agents that were trying to spike the Hunter Biden investigation. So that's why we're talking about the FBI. In addition to, not exclusive of, Garland in the White House.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Neil Katyal is the Obama Solicitor General and now a contributor to the New Marxist shows on MSNBC. He had this to say about the raid, and he's followed up with a challenge to Trump. Take a listen.
I mean, as a lawyer, the reason I show up on these shows is because I believe so much in the rule of law. And what it signifies to me, the news yesterday, is the Justice Department is returning to its historical position as a law enforcement agency above politics, trying to do the right thing and enforce the laws when they're violated. And, the best way I can put this is the reaction by the House GOP, which tweeted yesterday night. They said, quote, "If they can do this to a former president, imagine what they can do to you," end quote. Yeah, exactly. That's called the rule of law. That's the department. That's its job, which is to do to you and me or the president or former president what should be done. It's the same yardstick for everyone.
Yeah, that's what this is. This is a case of equal justice before the law. Okay, Neil. First of all, Neil, the great proponent of the rule of law, did he agree then with the Obama administration spying on journalists and millions of Americans and even senators?
Fox News reporters. James Rosen, remember?
And this is part of the double standard problem we have. When Attorney General Eric Holder was held in contempt, for sending guns to drug lords and refusing to be questioned about it, he just laughed it off. When Trump trade advisor Pete Navarro is held in contempt of Congress, he's shackled by the FBI. Equal justice before the law. Is that what we're seeing? Over the
Remember
last
when President
couple
Clinton
decades?
Met the AG on the tarmac in Phoenix? Said he was there to play golf. It was 110 that day.
Loretta Lynch.
Yeah, Loretta Lynch. Remember that?
Yeah. And now, Katyal, rather than responding to demands for explanation from the attorney general, the chief law enforcement officer in the country, or the FBI director, Katyal's challenge is, Donald Trump, you have a copy of the warrant. It explains what they were looking for, what statutes they think were violated, and what judge signed off on that. We already know that. Release the warrant. You called on Obama to release the birth certificate and all sorts of nonsense. If you believe this is such an abuse, let us see the warrant and let us decide for ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's incumbent upon President Trump to release a copy of the warrant that was presented to his attorneys at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, and she said it was very thin, and that the affidavit, the supporting documentation of what the probable cause was to obtain the warrant, was sealed.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Kevin Brock, former assistant director of Intel for the FBI, former principal deputy director of the National Counterterrorism Center as well. Kevin, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, Dan. Amy, thanks for having me on. Interesting day.
What do you think about the solicitor, former solicitor general's call on Trump to release the warrant, if there's nothing to see here?
Right. Yeah. First of all, as I understand it, his attorneys were allowed to read the warrant, but I don't think a copy was left behind. Usually they leave behind a receipt for what was taken.
Right.
So I'm not sure that it actually a copy is actually in the possession of the president, or that the warrant, if it is, that that warrant has a probable cause statement in it. So that's a little bit disingenuous. I think what you're hearing
especially
from guys
for, especially
like him,
for a former solicitor general and officer of the court. But anyway, go ahead.
Who should know better? Exactly. But to your point, and I think what we're hearing from the Democrats is a little bit of panic, you know, a fallback on the rubrics of, you know, the equal justice under the law. Nobody's above the law. Platitudes that are consoling and fundamentally true. However, what this action has unleashed, frankly, is probably the reelection of Donald Trump as the next president of the United States, because it has a dimension more than just a law enforcement action of a search for some documents. It has become a political statement, basically a declaration of war between two political parties, one of which controls the Justice Department and has used the Justice Department to basically try to take an adversary off the chessboard because they know the adversary is powerful. That's what this was about. Nobody's fooled by this. American people see through it. The Democrats know what it's about. That's why they're falling back on their, you know, their statements of, you know, nobody's above the law. Well, it's an arcane, obscure federal statute that's rarely prosecuted or enforced. We've seen that in the past with other people. So it doesn't pass the smell test. Even Politico said it. There better be a pulverizing amount of evidence against the president, or this is going to backfire. It's going to backfire because the sources I'm talking to, it is what it appears to be, a search for some disputed documents that Donald Trump held on to after leaving the White House. That's not going to be compelling to the American people.
From what you heard, like, do you have any idea, like, the content or the category of disputed document, what they would relate to?
We have a wide range of descriptions from classified material down to presidential memorabilia, you know, shared notes
like his,
with
like
foreign
his,
leaders.
His bobbleheads and stuff. I mean,
or
what,
letters
you know,
from
bobblehead
Kim Jong-un,
Rocket
or...
Man. Yeah.
Well, don't mock it. Clearly a threat to national security.
Well, but is there anything are your sources telling you that anything that they were looking for has anything to do with January 6th? Hello?
Did we lose Kevin?
Hello. Sorry, you just cut out on me.
Oh, it's okay. Sorry. I was just curious if your sources mentioned anything about, were they searching for in those 15 boxes, anything related to January 6th?
No, not picking up that at all. And let me make a finer point about classified. Even if he was in possession of classified documents, he is the classifying authority United States. Once he walks out the door, he's effectively declassifying it or declaring it so. So that's not a charge that's going to, you know, have any legs. So
the nature of these documents do they relate to anything or anybody specifically, as you've heard?
Not that I've heard, Dan.
Okay, so it's not like they got it. There's a document that says I colluded with Vlad Putin to rig the 2016 election. There's no document like that they're in possession.
Yeah, there's no nuclear code. There's no evidence of fraud or selling the office or trafficking in children. You know, all those things would have been, okay, the American people say, all right, yeah, you got them. Okay, fine.
Right.
Let the wheels of justice turn. This is about, and apparently is what it looks like, it's about a National Archives dispute over documents that they want turned over. That doesn't justify, I don't care. And you talk to anybody that used to be in the FBI or isn't currently, doesn't justify rolling up on a residence early in the morning in dark SUVs and doing an armed search. It just doesn't pass the test.
But to get this warrant and to effect this raid, they would have to make some sort of representation to the court that there was new information that was obtained and we need to act on this and so on and so forth. I mean, so is there any sort of context or scuttlebutt around that that you've heard?
For a document search like this, there has to be probable cause that the government can stand on that there's a danger the person in possession is going to destroy the document and that they won't respond to the normal course of action, which is a subpoena.
Right.
They're going to ignore the subpoena. And so they'll ignore it, so we can't. The government can't get access that way. And it requires a forcible entry into the house, seizing the house, controlling the house, because there's a concern that the documents will be destroyed. Again, this just doesn't make sense in the broad perspective of how these things normally unfold.
Well, how long can they be quiet on this? I mean, when are we going to hear from Merrick Garland or anybody?
Yeah, that's troubling. Another platitude that's relied on is, we can't comment on an ongoing investigation.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. You know, that might work for a routine white-collar crime that you want to make sure that you're not impugning somebody's reputation unnecessarily if they turn out to be not guilty. This search of a former president's residence, the visibility is bright as the sun. There has to be. In order to reassure the American people, there has to be some type of comment that the action was necessary and prudent. Absent of that, we're left to speculate, and probably rightly so, that it wasn't necessary and prudent. So if I was the Attorney General or the Director of the FBI, I would be making efforts to do that.
Yeah, going back to what you said about how political this appears to be, almost immediately after the raid, Mark Elias, who was infamous for some people have forgotten, they don't have a scorecard
right.
From. He's the Perkins Coie lawyer. He's dossier boy, and the cutout with the campaign and all these nefarious characters. Mark Elias tweeting out immediately, this could result in prohibiting President Trump from running for reelection because that's one of the associated penalties that's possible. Now, that's of dubious
correct.
Constitutionality. Jonathan Turley and others have argued about whether Congress can proscribe statutorily beyond what's included in the Constitution without amending the Constitution. But setting that aside for a second, just the fact that the timing of that, Mark Elias, who was up to his neck in all the Russian collusion prestidigitation, is tweeting out about Trump's potential penalties that would include barring Trump from running for election again.
Yeah, so another indication of a possible colossal miscalculation here. If the powers that be who thought this was a good idea determined that, hey, we can get him charged on an obscure federal statute that will, because there's language in the statute, that will prohibit him from running for office in the future, then we've just eliminated the major Republican adversary going forward. That's not going to work. I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I think everybody agrees that if that was their motivation, if that was their strategy, then they deserve every bit of backfire that this is going to generate.
Yeah, and it sounds very akin to General Michael Flynn and the Logan Act, doesn't it?
That thought occurred to me the other day as well. Similar, where you're plucking out federal statutes that are on the books. Look, you can find a federal statute to fit almost anything if you look hard enough. But the rule of law in this country also includes fair play and fair application of justice and prudent decisions as to where you marshal resources and leverage the immense powers of the Justice Department and against whom you're doing that, because there are ramifications for doing so. And an investigation over a bunch of disputed documents is not enough in the prudential judgment of the Justice Department, one would hope, to counter the political firestorm that's going to follow on the heels of that. It's not good for the nation, and so why pursue something just on because you're taking a stance, well, nobody's above the law. No, this is a danger to the country.
we're going to suffer for it.
We were talking before you joined us about if the FBI should continue to exist, and if it should, how it should be reformed. Of course, this is not a unique conversation, especially now. But we've been having it for a while, including with you over the years. And,
yeah.
And I mean, you're a good example of why we should have faith in the FBI, but you're not there anymore. So I think part of this is you make the case or explain what the FBI does that is a value add over what local or state or other federal law enforcement does, which is, you know, why the agency should continue to exist, but perhaps in a reformed capacity.
Right. This is a question that I've been answering, as you point out, for since the Comey-McCabe Russia collusion made up investigation, and I completely understand the concerns of half of America, at least now, maybe more, that the FBI is just allowing itself to be used in political vendetta investigations. It's becoming harder to defend, I'll admit it. If there's any comfort I can offer is that the agents that are currently in the FBI, certainly the retired agent community, is almost unanimous in the fact that they're aghast at what has taken place over the last couple of days and are deeply disappointed that the FBI has allowed itself to be involved in something like this. Dan, I mean, Louis Free would have told the Attorney General to go jump off a cliff if they ever came to the FBI with an idea to do what took place this week. And rightly so, because he would have understood that the political fallout, the damage to the trust in the FBI that would occur far outweighs any indictment and conviction over disputed documents that would be netted. The fact that wasn't taken into the calculus is disturbing to a lot of current and former agents, and it's disappointing. I would argue, I still maintain, that it would be a little bit of a fool's errand to try to disband or dismantle the FBI. We're hearing that call more and more because of the residual value of the FBI to gain the cooperation of individuals in order to fight crime, to get sources, and to build upon the legacy that has been created. It's in peril now, I admit it, but I'm not sure. That would be an awful big baby to throw out with the bathwater. And I do agree that reforms are the FBI is going to feel the power of reforms over the next few years because of this.
Kevin Brock, former Assistant Director of Intel for the FBI, former Principal Deputy Director of the National Counterterrorism Center. Kevin, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. KJP, the quadruple threat, was fielding a lot of questions, of course, about the Monday night raid on Mar-a-Lago. Phil Wegman over at Real Clear Politics took a sort of a different angle, almost tongue-in-cheek. I think that this was missed by KJP, but he asked her about President Biden, the big guy's promise as a candidate to heal the nation, restore faith in our institutions. And so he just wanted to do a stop, look, and listen to, find out how that's going.
You know, but he has been able to do some things that people said he couldn't do, right? The bipartisanship on the bipartisan infrastructure law, it brought the right and the R's and the D's, Republicans and Democrats together. That was because of this president's leadership that he was able to do that, to deliver an infrastructure investment that was historical. We were able to do that with the CHIPS and Science Act, bring the two sides together to get something done, to make sure that we're leaders across the world when it comes to manufacturing. And so there are things that this president has done because of his leadership. Somebody was asking me about NATO. That is also important as well. NATO is the strongest that it's been in modern times because of his leadership abroad. I think there's still more work to be done. It's not like turning the light switch on. And so we're going to continue to do the work. So there's no yes or no answer. Yeah. We're going to continue
doing
to
the work. We do the work. That's what we do every day. We do the work every day. Yeah, it's wonderful. It takes leadership to get a bunch of big spending Marxists and a handful of big spending Republican senators together to spend money we don't have. That is historical, as KJP would say. And as far as NATO coming together, yeah. The weakness of this administration green lighting Putin to invade Ukraine and scare the bejesus out of Sweden and Finland into joining NATO is another testament to the leadership and the restoration of faith in national and international institutions. She's not very good at her job, but to be fair to her, she doesn't have a lot of material to work with either. For more on all this, we're pleased to be joined by Scott Walker, former governor of Wisconsin, of course, now president and CEO of Young America's Foundation. Scott, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning. Good to be with you.
You know, and even with this historical, again, to use KJP's preferred adjective, achievement with the skinny Green New Deal, the 87,000 new IRS agents and all that, I know that's being hailed, but the response from the public is, yeah, we don't think this is going to reduce inflation. And so they're not really buying it either. So all this spending isn't really changing the state of play for this administration very much.
Yeah, I think she confused historical with hysterical.
Yeah.
It is hysterical that she thinks anybody would buy into this. I mean, even the name of the Inflation Reduction Act. Yeah, I think you don't have to be an economist to know if you throw, you know, billions of dollars more at the federal government and more federal spending, as opposed to doing things that drive prices down by putting more money back in the hands of the American people, that's actually not going to affect. Actually, if you look at the analysis of it for the first 2 years, it actually drives inflation up. It's why even Bernie Sanders acknowledged it's not going to do much about inflation. So stop kidding themselves. Then you add in the massive tax increases, particularly on employers, and that means, what do employers do? They're going to pass it on like they pass on any other cost. It's the reason why costs have gone up. If their costs go up, they pass the cost on to the consumer. And in the end, we're going to be paying more over the next 2 years, not less.
And hiring 87,000 IRS agents, why aren't they hiring Border Patrol agents? I mean, look, it just makes me sick that they're spending more money to try to find money than protecting their own citizens.
Well, when you think about it, they're actually spending, or they're hiring more IRS agents than are in the entire British Army, for example. You mentioned the border, all the other things we should be doing. I think right now people need to be thinking between now and November about who they're going to vote for any office. And they're not talking about how to truly get inflation under control to get the cost of food, gas, housing down. They're not talking about public safety, what you need to do to keep your community safe. And we're not talking about national security, which is the border. You don't have to be a border state to be concerned about this. If you got a kid, grandkid, niece, nephew, someone out there you care about, be worried about fentanyl, because it's not an overdose that could take them. It's one dose, and those doses are coming over our southern border, in many cases pushed through folks from China that are really disrupting, again, not only the border states, but this entire nation, and yet they can't do anything. In fact, not only has Biden not done something about that, arguably his policies have made it worse over the last nearly 2 years.
Speaking of lawlessness and the scourge of fentanyl and other matters, before we get to the Republican primaries that were held yesterday, including in your home state of Wisconsin, the Democrat primary for Ilhan Omar's seat in Minnesota, That was surprisingly close. She nearly eked out a victory, and her opponent largely took her to task over the issue of lawlessness in Minneapolis-St. Paul, the rise in violent crime. I mean, it seems like that may have more currency than a lot of these Democrat governors and local officials and members of Congress would like to think it does.
Well, I'll give you two examples. One was a preview there, and the other is right up the road from you guys. One in Minnesota, Minneapolis in particular, after all the chaos a couple of years ago, on the ballot last year was an initiative that would have defunded the police for all their talk and hype from
right.
Omar and others on the left. And it failed. And it actually, interestingly, not only failed, but it failed in some of the lowest economic wards of the city of Minneapolis. The areas where it did well were the cheeky, you know, white college-aged dominated areas, the places that were the lowest economic areas were the areas that actually performed the best when it came to voting against an effort to defund the police. So that should be a forewarning to her and to anybody else across the country. The other one is just down from you guys, and that's Kenosha. Kenosha has never elected a Republican county executive ever in the history of that county. It's been a blue-collar, working-class city. And this April, they elected the very first Republican, Samantha Kirkman, as the county executive. I think, again, that's a direct correlation to the riots we saw in Kenosha a few years ago and people who historically voted Democrat saying enough is enough. We need someone who's going to actually make our streets safe.
So what happened to your candidate last night? And she was also backed by President
Trump.
Well,
you know, Rebecca Playfish was lieutenant governor, and Tim Michaels ran and spent close to twice as much money and had the endorsement of Donald Trump. So those things will certainly play a factor out there.
Yeah.
Bottom line is Tim is a builder. He's joined with another person on the ticket, Roth, who's a builder. They're both veterans, and there couldn't be a starker contrast with the two of them who know how to get things working again versus Tony Evers and Mandela Barnes, the governor and lieutenant governor of Wisconsin, who shut down the state, who shut down the economy, shut down our businesses, and worst of all, shut down our schools. And when you just ask about public safety, Kenosha is a prime example of that. Tony Evers not only sat on the sidelines, as the Kenosha paper said, which historically endorses Democrats, Tony Evers' words back at the beginning of those protests actually poured the fuel on the flames of the riots that came into Kenosha. He needs to go, and I'm confident Tim Michaels and Roger Roth will do it.
The one thing on Michaels, this is like a idiosyncratic thing with me, and I'm critical. Like Paul Vallis does this all the time too. Bruce Rauner used to do this. It's so annoying. He said, "I'm not looking for a political career. I'm doing this to serve." He mentions Trump. You know, he wanted to drain the swamp and so on and so forth. "I'm not looking for a political career. I don't need to do this, and I'm doing it anyway." Don't say that. If you don't need to do this, then don't do this. You're not doing anybody any favors. And by the way, Tim Michaels ran for office in 98. He ran for office in 2004. So, I mean, don't tell me you're not interested in holding public office when this is your third run for public office. Just stop with it. You know, I'm doing this out of, you know, my graciousness kind of thing. It just rubs me the wrong way. I don't know about you.
I think that the better point to be made on that, which is legit, is I don't need the job, meaning he doesn't need the money, he doesn't need the pay. He's doing this because he feels strongly. And again, I can understand why, because any of us here in Wisconsin who live, I mean, frankly, if it hadn't been for the state Supreme Court, of which I appointed a number of those folks, remember 2 years ago, stepping in and saying Tony Evers' administration overstepped their authorities, we might still be shut down. We might have been shut down as long as you all were in Illinois with Pritzker.
Yeah.
So when he came up to Kenosha and hung out at his horse farm or went down to Naples. But we understand how bad things can be in Wisconsin if it weren't for the fact that we have a Republican legislature blocking the radical agenda of Tony Evers. And now we need to end that.
Yeah, and it's a good point you make, because we got two state Supreme Court races in Illinois, too. The state Supreme Court matters, and the lockdown era was a good reminder of that. So also in Wisconsin, of course, Ron Johnson is up for reelection, and that's a critical race, particularly if Republicans are going to take control of the Senate. So what's your handicapping of Ron Johnson's reelection?
Well, they're going to spend probably close to $250 million. And those are big dollar wow. amounts, even for a state like Illinois, let alone Wisconsin, with just under 6 million people. And so Ron's done a fabulous job. He's the only accountant in the U.S. Senate. He's a manufacturer. That's how I got to know him. We need more people like that. We need people who don't back down, not just to the swamp in Washington, but even at times won't even back down to his own party leadership. He questions, he probes, he advocates for the hardworking taxpayers. In contrast, Mandela Barnes, they cleared the field. I don't know if it was Obama or somebody came in and cleared the field for him a few weeks ago of the other Democrats, kind of like what they did with Klobuchar and Mayor Pete for Biden at the beginning of that primary process. But I think it's a crazy proposition. They put Mandela Barnes, the current lieutenant governor, I mentioned in a state that's been shut down schools, shut down businesses, shut down the economy. But this is a guy in Barnes who's more comfortable voting to raise your taxes than even to pay his own. He was delinquent in his own property taxes when he first ran. But more importantly, this is a guy who wants to get rid of ICE on the southern border so that things like fentanyl aren't coming up to threaten the lives of our children. This is a radical, and it's going to be a contrast between a common sense conservative and a radical wannabe squad member. And it's going to be close, though. It's a close race, but not a close call.
Since you're now the president of the Young Americans Foundation, always good to check in with you about college campuses. There was a piece written by professors from the University of Arizona, University of Colorado, in Inside Higher Education recently, in which they write, I'm quoting, "Admitting that the normative definitions of success and merit are in and of themselves barriers to achieving the goals of justice, diversity, equity, and inclusion is necessary but not sufficient to create change." The piece is basically an argument against merit and for equity. And I just wonder how, you're helping to fight that battle yeah. by providing speakers on campuses.
Well, it's just a reminder of the radicalness of what's going on out there. I've said this year in particular that if we closed our colleges down again, it would do more to stop the spread of communism than it would to stop the spread of COVID. This is just how radical. Marxist ideas like this are commonplace. In fact, for all the talk about diversity, the one area of diversity that's almost non-existent is diversity of thought. And this piece is a classic example of that. You know, if you listen to them, when you're done with college, try going out and buying a loaf of bread based on the principles they're talking about. But try trying to feed your family and pay the mortgage and pay the bills. No, that's not going to work. In the real world, you've got to have merit. You've got and the beautiful thing about merit is it's colorblind. It's, you know, it's like the Statue of Justice with a cloth tied around her eyes. It doesn't know what you look like, who you are, what sex you are, what you believe. Merit's just something that's, you know, meritocracy is part of the beauty of America. It's why people came here. We're not a class-based society. In America, anyone, young or old, black or white, rich or poor, can achieve things. And it's why people for decades, for centuries, have come to America and why there's more than a million who legally come here every single year. We're four times greater than the next closest country when it comes to foreign-born citizens. And I tell our kids who come to our conferences, if you want to know more, YF.org, bring someone to your campus who's come here from a former Soviet or communist country because they love America more than anyone you'll meet.
Right. And the great irony, of course, is you want to advance diversity, embrace meritocracy. Meritocracy produces
Absolutely.
Diversity.
Absolutely. In the purest of forms.
Scott Walker, president and CEO of Young Americans Foundation, of course, the former two-term governor of Wisconsin. Scott, thanks for joining us, as always. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a good one.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, as anticipated, inflation has eased a bit in July over July. 8.5%, down from 9.1. First time inflation has eased since April, 9.1 in June. Hey, it's working.
The Inflation Reduction Act. And I love how people get so excited. Oh, gas is now $4.30 again. Yippee. Well, it was $2.38 when Biden took office.
Right. It's still doubled in the last year and a half. Give me a break. But
groceries are still a disaster. It's just not good.
We're still looking at brokerage accounts getting nuked. Remember, we still anticipate a 75 basis point increase in September from the Fed. But what does it all mean? Have we reached peak inflation? Is it going to start steadily declining and aiding and abetting household incomes in the process and purchasing power? Stephen Moore, economist, author of Trumponomics and Govzilla, joins us now. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, and by the way, yes, inflation is going to come down because Congress is about to pass the Inflation Reduction Act.
Spend and tax
$750 billion more, and that's going to bring the inflation rate down because we're going to, you know, raise taxes on businesses. That'll bring the inflation rate down, and then we're going to have $700 billion of more government spending. Yeah, that'll bring the inflation rate down. Amy, you're so right about this stuff. You know, when you've got a situation where you've got what was the new number, 8.5%?
Yeah, 8.5.
Last year, 8.5 is the new number. When you have 8.5% inflation and 5.1% wage gains, that means, you know, every month people are falling further and further and further behind. This is a president in his first 18 months who succeeded in making Americans poor.
We're falling behind slower, so we're happy about that.
Yeah, exactly. Now, inflation is coming down. And do you know, Dan and Amy, why the inflation is coming down? Like, for example, you mentioned the gas price. You know why gas prices are coming down?
Demand is coming down.
Saudi Arabia.
Demand. I'm going to have to give this one to Dan.
Yeah.
Because this year, summer travel so far this year on the roads is as low as it was during the summer of the pandemic of 2020. So why aren't people spending as much? Because they can't afford to.
Right.
I mean, how is that good news?
Yeah, right. So it's a little bit misleading. That's the bad news is, you know,
I mean, if you want to take the gas price to $20 a gallon, guess what? Maybe that's what their intention is, because, of course, they don't want people driving cars. They don't want people using gas and oil. So you've got a recession. So people are spending less, and when you have less demand, then prices do start to come down. But you're also going to start to see a real decline in employment, unfortunately. I hope I'm wrong about that, but the economy definitely has slowed dramatically.
And you also see core inflation is still an issue. Of course it is, non-energy. Because of rising housing costs and rent costs. So housing and healthcare, that inflation is subsiding much more slowly.
You better believe it. I mean, rents are still really high. I believe that they're not, you know, fully accounting for the cost of rent in the inflation numbers, because even in Chicago, where people are leaving Chicago, rents are high. You know, so that's a big problem. Now, I want to go back to this idea, if I may, because we have a big vote coming up on Friday morning in the United States House of Representatives on a reprehensible bill, an absolutely a disgrace of a bill that on top of the $3 trillion Joe Biden and the Democrats have already spent in the last 18 months. They now want to add $700 billion more. And by the way, I should just amend that by saying Republicans are not completely blameless here, Dan. They voted for a bunch of this crap, too. And so now you've got $3 trillion, plus they want to add now another $700 billion. We're moving very close to spending in just 18 months under Biden what it costs to an adjusted inflation numbers, what it costs to win World War II. That's how much Biden has spent and borrowed. Big vote comes up on Friday on this fraudulent bill, which, don't forget, hires 87,000 new IRS agents. And that bill will Nancy Pelosi can only afford to lose 5 Democrats out of 219 I think a lot of them are there in the Chicago area. Do you think we can count on any of them to vote no, Dan?
No,
that's not
going
to happen.
But here is
two idiot senators both voted for this bill.
Of course,
one of them. By the way, remember this: if one of those two senators, Durbin or who's the other,
Duckworth,
if either of them had voted no, they would have stopped this bill. So every Democrat senator, because it passed 51-50 with Kamala Harris breaking the tie. Every single Democrat in the Senate is responsible for this bill. It is outrageous, and the worst thing about it is these 87,000 new IRS agents, which are being used to intimidate taxpayers to pay more taxes. I love this. You know, I think it was Durbin the other day said, "Gee, if you pay your taxes lawfully, you have nothing to worry about." Oh, sure. Anybody been audited? I have been.
When I started working here the first time. And they told me that was going to happen, too. But here's the thing. The IRS came out and they said, well, we're not going to audit anybody who makes less than $400,000 a year.
Yes.
That is such a lie.
Yeah, I know. It is a big lie. And you're exactly right. And you can play the tape, by the way, from what's the woman who's the press secretary?
Jean-Claude Paul.
Nobody less than $400,000. That we had an amendment. The Republicans had an amendment on Saturday morning to the bill saying nobody who makes less than $400,000 should be subject to one of these new audits. Every single Democrat in the Senate voted no against that. So they are lying through their teeth. Of course they're going after people who make less than $400,000. You think they're going to go after Bill Gates or Warren Buffett or Zuckerberg or General Electric or Google? No, they have armies and armies of tax accountants and lawyers. They go after the little guy because that's the person who's defenseless. And incidentally, my friend Adam Angieski, who's from the Chicago area, who has the group Open the Books, you may be familiar with his report. The IRS as well. Did you know they have guns and ammo and military vehicles?
Of course.
The IRS. Why do they
literally
need that, Dan? Why do they need guns at the IRS?
To help to make sure you write that check they say you got to write. You know, it's the Rocco and Moose helping you find your wallet from the IRS. Also the person responsible for this, as you're talking about the Democrat socialist, is a woman named Suzanne Clark. Now, nobody knows who that is, but I'll tell you who it is.
I don't know who she is.
She's the president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in 2020 changed the scorecard to endorse 23 House freshman Democrats for reelection. 23, so you just said we need five to flip. 15 of the 23 won. And all of them have been in lockstep with all of this spend that you're talking about and all of the other associated horribles that have been unfurled in this administration. So there's your business community. There's your corporate business community, U.S. Chamber of Commerce, backing these Democrat socialists in the House. And now we're on the cusp of what you just described.
Dan, it's an excellent point. And by the way, I failed to mention that we also had that $200 billion corporate welfare bill that just passed, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, with Republican support. I think there were something like 18 senators who voted for that. And guess what organization supported that $200 billion spending bill?
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
They sure did. They are not a anti-big government. They are in bed with big government at the Chamber of Commerce. So I've lost any confidence in them. And if you're a member of the Chamber of Commerce, maybe you want to join something like the Job Creators Network or something that actually
Job Creators.
Government.
Well, and by the way, if you're a member of the Business Roundtable too, the Business Roundtable is chaired by Mary Barra, the CEO of GM. They're opposed to this skinny Green New Deal gambit that you're talking about, and she's standing with the president lobbying for it. She's the chairman of the Business Roundtable.
I know. Look, I want to tell you one other thing. There's a great editorial yesterday in the Wall Street Journal that pointed out, because the $350 billion in this bill goes to what I call the climate change industrial complex. And this is a multi-trillion dollar industry right now, folks. This is all about money. It doesn't have anything to do with saving the planet. It's about these investors and these companies getting rich. Anyway, the for spending $380 billion, the Wall Street Journal found that this will, over the next 100 years, 80 years, till in the year 2100, do you know how much this will lower temperatures by?
About as much as the Inflation Reduction Act will lower inflation by?
Exactly. So the number that they came up with 0.001%. So by the year 2100, instead of the average temperature of the Earth being like 59 degrees, it's going to be 58.999 degrees.
I can't wait for 2100. I'm so looking forward to 2100. That's when it all pays off.
I mean, I'm laughing because it's so absurd that these morons in Washington who can't do anything right, they think that they're going to change the temperature of the planet. I mean, come on. Meanwhile, did you see China dropped out of all the negotiations on climate change? They're not even pretending that they care about climate change. And the only person who thinks they care anymore about this is John Kerry, our idiot climate change czar who runs around the world on his jets talking about how apocalypse is upon us. I mean, this is just $300 billion we're taking from our drug industry that actually saves lives. Yeah, trying to win the race for the cure for cancer and heart disease and epilepsy and ALS. And they're taking that money and they're giving it to the climate change industrial complex, which produces nothing. I mean, we get 5 or 6% of our energy from wind and solar. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. John Kerry keeps having to answer that question, why the long face, too, at those climate change meetings. Steve Moore, economist, author of Trumponomics and GovZilla. Steve, thanks as always.
I'm counting on you guys, you, Dan, and Amy. You're going to get us those last 5 votes in the Chicago area to stop this atrocious bill.
We'll get on the blower with Calamity Jan Schakowsky and see what she thinks. But don't hold your breath there, Steve.
All right. See you guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, excuse me, Dan and Amy, the Empower Illinois 2021 report. So Empower Illinois is essentially the umbrella scholarship organization for the Illinois tax credit scholarships. In its fourth year, 2021 was its fourth year, originally authorized for 5 years. I think they got an extension of 1 year last year, but Governor Spaulding is an antagonist to school choice. He does not like...
It's because unions don't like it.
Correct. He doesn't like the tax credit scholarship program. He doesn't like opportunity scholarships. He doesn't like families that were not born into billions being able to have the same choices that he has and had for his children. So here's what Empower Illinois did in 2021. $6,197 scholarships. The average scholarship amount was $6,600. 73 schools raised enough funds to award their entire wait list, and 226 schools increased the number of students receiving an award. So 6,197 is good, and those schools adding to their ranks, that's good. But the demand is a multiple of that. Almost 5 times. It would require more than $196 million as compared to the $43 million raised last year to award a scholarship to each of the 29,821 students in line for an opportunity scholarship last year. So much greater demand than supply. Also, some things about the scholarship recipients. 67%, so 2/3 of the scholarship recipients qualify for federal free or reduced school lunch program. So they're not coming from well-to-do households. 1 in 9 scholarship recipients is a unique learner. And this is a cool part of the tax credit scholarship program. Unique learner. So that could be a child with an IEP, an individual education plan that's special needs. It could also be gifted, a gifted student that's, you know, ahead of his peers, working at his or her pace, or an English language learner. So those are being provided for as well. for families that are trying to access this. The average family household income for a scholarship recipient is just over $43,000, which is about 165% of federal poverty level. So a lot of upside here and a lot of need here if you want to participate in the tax credit scholarship program, and I would encourage you to. EmpowerIllinois.org is where you go to make a donation. You can direct your donation to a particular school, so if you wanted to provide kids the opportunity to go to your alma mater and, you know, support your alma mater by extension, you can do it that way too. But yeah, so, I mean, it's a program that's growing, that's building a constituency, and maybe finally getting through to a majority of Illinoisans that this is not an attack on government school systems. This is an empowerment of parents and trying to provide access to the best educational opportunities for their kids, and it's working. And so one of the few things in Illinois that should be scaled. Yeah, how about that? Especially when you compare it to the conversation we had yesterday with Ted Dabrowski, where at CPS, Chicago Public Schools, you have a hollowing out, whether they are in line for an opportunity scholarship or not, they're leaving. Capacity for 360,000 across some, 478 standalone schools. Capacity for 360,000. Enrollment, 243,000. In high schools with capacity for 1,200 that have 64 students enrolled, like Manly High School. And as we went over, Fanger High School, 1,224 student capacity, 244 enrolled. And here are the proficiencies. Percent of students proficient in reading in 2019. Manly, 2%.
Oh my God.
Proficient in math, 1%. Fanger, proficient in reading, 2%. Proficient in math, 0. Goose egg. And we talked about the statewide. I mean, the statewide averages are dismal enough. Both for English and math, they're under 40%. But these are under 5%. And you can understand why there's a demand for better options with respect to parents who are paying attention and want the best for their kids. For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined by Teresa Mall, assistant editor at Spectator World, former editor at Gunpowder Magazine. I was a...
You were a centerfold for that.
I was, yeah. I'm glad you remember that issue.
Your extended magazine clip was... That's something we'll never forget, Dad.
It was pretty good. Wow. Teresa Mall, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So you wrote about this school choice generally recently. The school choice moment is now. And part of your angle on that piece was really to challenge parents, not just to challenge their school boards and their teachers' unions if they're in the government school systems, but also to challenge their lawmakers to, well, do things like advance the tax credit scholarship program here in Illinois.
Right. Well, we've seen across the country parents rising up and kind of doing the job that lawmakers are supposed to do. You know, I outlined in my piece how parents are spending several nights a week going to school board meetings. We see, you know, these crowded meetings where parents have to really get vocal, school boards make demands. They're pushing back against woke curriculum, against these failing schools. And they shouldn't have to. You know, there used to be a time not so long ago where you could send your kid to the local public school and trust that he or she was learning the basics, reading, writing, arithmetic, you know, learning how to be a good civil, member of society. And those days are long gone. And the public schools have been failing for so long. And parents are wising up to this and they're aware of their options. As you pointed out, these education freedom is what I like to call it. These education freedom options are working. Parents are telling other parents about these opportunities and parents want more of it. You know, it's absurd that something as fundamental as educating your own child that parents essentially have no choice. And it not only affects parents and and their children, but it affects our entire society. If you think of what's going on in these schools and how we're churning out generations of uneducated, miseducated, brainwashed kids, what is our future going to look like in America? So the time is now. It's a shame that it's gotten to be this bad in our, in a lot of our government schools. They're not all terrible, but a lot of them are getting pretty bad and getting worse. But now's the time. Yeah, Republican leaders need to be just that. They need to step up. They need to speak on behalf of these parents and lead the way so that our future is safe and these parents have choices now before it's too late.
What do you think the biggest point of contention is, though, with the unions? Why are they so afraid of school choice?
Well, these teachers' unions are super powerful. They're very well-funded, and they are supported by Democratic lawmakers. You look at the places where the unions are the strongest, places like Chicago, L.A., big Democratic strongholds. And what these teachers' unions, these teachers who are members of the unions, they have a cushy job. They have, just like most government employees, it's very hard to get rid of them. It's almost impossible to fire a public school teacher. And they can, sit back, have 0% proficiency in math and reading and get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to do such a poor job. So what they fear is the competition that school choice brings. They fear that, as you mentioned earlier, all of these public schools are being emptied. And, sooner or later, it's not the mission of the school choice movement to get rid of government schools. And a lot of parents, even when they do have an option to send their child to an alternative school, they often do actually choose the local school because a lot of them are satisfied. But in places where it's really bad, these teachers' union members know that they're not doing a good job. They know that they're getting paid to do nothing, and they're afraid of any competition. If you were doing a good job and another school opened up across the street, you'd be like, oh, I'm not worried. I'm doing great. My kids love me. We're successful. Why would you fear competition? It's obvious because they fear for their cushy jobs, their pensions, and everything that goes with it. So,
it's
pretty straightforward.
I understand, and I understand why teachers will recoil at some of those characterizations that are offered about the insulation from competition, and they're not doing a good job based on the stats, and then we play the pointing fingers game about resources or parents at home and so on and so forth. But here's the bottom line. To be a member of the teachers union, like in Chicago, you have to participate in a fraud, and there's just no two ways around it. And I'm not even talking about the fraud of depriving children with even the opportunity to earn a quality education that prepares them to be, independent, successful people. I'm talking about a fraud like where you go to a high school for 1,300 kids that stays open and has the staffing for 1,300 kids, and the actual number of kids in school is 64, and you participate in this Potemkin school because, it's all about keeping up appearances so all the adults can enjoy the salaries and benefits they've come to lean on by being a member of CPS while they mark days off a calendar. That's not everybody, but it is everybody that's participating in a fraud that's outlined by the capacity versus enrollment numbers, particularly given the educational results like this. That to me is, in a sense, if it wasn't so gosh darn expensive and if you weren't having so many generations of kids being relegated to second-class citizen status for life, I would almost feel sorry for them because it's got to be soul-crushing to be a part of this Politburo-like agrarian co-op version of education.
Right. And, I don't want to bash in any way all public school teachers. I know there's millions of really great people out there who are working in public schools and really good teachers and good schools. But like you said, the money is always there. It's propping up these schools that are, set up for thousands of students. And then whenever choice is an option, it kind of dwindles and they still get the funding. Like, have you ever heard of a public school cutting funding or asking or saying, we don't need as much money anymore. We found a way to, cut administration. I think
right.
something like administrative positions went up like 50%. Not school teachers, but administrative. Like I don't know what that means. It's just they're always throwing more and more money at government schools, and we're not seeing results from it. So we must be doing something wrong along the way. I mean, choice is working. Parents like it, and it's a myth to say that if you give choice that public schools will be destroyed. Like I said, a lot of people will still choose their public school. But also, if you do have that competition, another school opens up across the street, there's going to be another teaching position open at that school. So it's not like you're saying, like, we're going to get rid of 70% of teachers in America. It's like, no, you're going to give them options as well. So it's just, you know, it's kind of spreading around the wealth. The money should follow the student, in my opinion. I think most parents, whenever given the option, would agree with that. You know, they want to have control over how their child is educated, where and by whom. And it's just a no-brainer. And to fight something so fundamental and so American as having a choice in how you educate your child is flawed. And I think we need to dig a little deeper on why that might be the case.
She is Teresa Mall, assistant editor at Spectator World, former editor at Gunpowder Magazine as well. Teresa, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you both.
Thank you, and she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
What's up, the fuck?
What does Kim Fox say? This is... Were they stoned when they wrote this song?
Dear Lord. The only thing more annoying than this song is actually listening to Kim Fox.
Oh, I know, because she's very... I think she was a hypnotist in her first life, because when she talks...
She did a...
It's very same song.
She did a press avail. I know that... She had this wonderful hagiographic piece that WGN did for her about these exonerations and her being handed down by her office because of questionable tactics by a now retired Chicago police detective named Ronaldo Guevara.
Yeah, here's the reaction to that.
They go hand in hand. Righting these wrongs is a method of public safety.
Yeah, that's public safety? Okay.
Well, I agree if somebody was wrongly imprisoned, wrongly convicted, that they were victimized and that should be set right. I don't know that one is exclusive of the other. So did anybody in the dutiful Chicago political press corps ask any questions about the other class of victims and who's victimizing them and what she's doing about known repeat criminals?
About I mean, she is letting people who have been charged with carjacking, attempted murder, out on electronic monitoring. That's all her and the judges that, you know, Judge Evans as well. And the first thing she addressed was the fact that 240-plus employees have fled her office. And what did she blame? COVID.
The reality is that we are in the midst of what has been designated as the Great Resignation. And we have not been spared.
And she assumed no personal responsibility for the mass exodus, even though, you know, Murphy, who left.
Jim Murphy
wrote a scathing email on the way out blaming them and saying this is the reason why people, it's because their political agenda they put before people that they're supposed to protect. But this is a kicker. So while she's walking away, and by the way, nobody asked her about her husband's video remote control.
I'm anxious to know if he's back online with Call of Duty
or Fortnite. What if he was playing Fortnite?
What's the car game?
Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, or Space. I mean, he's a little older. Maybe Space Invaders. Maybe Pac-Man. Or Miss Pac-Man.
Oh, I remember Miss Pac-Man.
Yeah,
she had a cute little pink bow on her
Frogger,
head.
Frogger, Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong. I love Donkey Kong.
Galaga.
Galaga, I was good at
Galaga. I mean, I'll go over.
You'll go over to the house and play games.
If he needs somebody to play with him, and I'll play.
Because their marriage isn't doing well. But of course, nobody asked that. But I would have asked, like, if I was there, because I'm going to get them. They don't invite me to their press conferences.
Oh, that's not very nice.
Well, I've been trying. to go. What's the status of your relationship? And do you know that if roles were reversed, you would go to jail? If he hit you, you would go to jail.
Not roles reversed. If you weren't the Cook County State's attorney, you would have been taken into custody.
Because you assaulted your husband. And then you admitted it.
Right.
And we approve of it.
Right.
She hit him. She didn't deny that she slapped him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anywho. All right. But while she's walking out.
What about Bobby Rush's popcorn? Has she found that yet?
The 89-cent bag.
Yeah.
While she was walking away from the lectern, she was summoned back by a question from Craig Wall.
Do you want another term, Ms. Fox? Are you interested in running again? Or
I'm interested in making sure that the people who have had convictions that we cannot stand by have an opportunity to have their freedom and that we right the wrongs of the past.
Okay, well, so she just restates the purpose of the press conference. So they assembled for this press release that she offered in just human form. I mean, she could have just sent a statement on this. No questions about,
the Safety Act that's coming up January.
Which she supported, of course. And also just, how many people are we up to who have either murdered or attempted to murder while on electronic monitoring for a felony? I know it was north of 70 last year. We're definitely over 30 this year. So just like, for example, that class of criminal.
Right.
And
they get 2 days off on the weekends to take care of personal things.
Well, that's all part of the law now. But there are no questions about. People that were mistreated by police or people that were wrongly convicted, prosecutorial misconduct, police misconduct, whatever it is. Of course, those are victims and they deserve justice. So that's fine. We can talk about that. But then can we also talk about the day to day endemic violence that we have? No, we don't have time for that.
312-642-5600 turnkey.pro answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. One text message. Fox believes criminals are the victims.
Yeah, basically.
And she, by the way, too, she reminded people too. Well, I have been elected twice. Oh,
well,
she has been, but just reminding you.
Yeah.
That people love me.
She'd probably be elected a third time. We'll see.
Oh, my. If they elect her a third time.
2024 is, still 2 years away. In the suburbs, too, since basically the Kim Fox protocol is coming to the suburbs. So just a heads up for all you champagne socialists that look aghast at what's happening in Chicago. You're about to get mugged by the reality of the culture, the law enforcement culture in Chicago under the Lightfoots and the Foxes of the world. So just a heads up. The Lake County Board, rather than doing something productive like taking up the implications of the Safety Act for Lake County residents, they're instead doing what these mindless Chardonnay Antifa types in the suburbs do. A resolution to ban both automatic weapons and automatic weapons. Okay, they're banned. And large magazines for ammunition. Yeah. I'll tell you, there's at least one, and of course it passed overwhelmingly because the Republicans, the surrender Republicans in the state, have destroyed their standing in the suburbs. So these collar counties are complete catastrophes as Democrat socialists have infiltrated and taken over with the help of surrender Republicans, including some of those still milling about on county boards, as county board executives, as local legislators. Absolutely a surrender of the collar counties by the Illinois Republican Party. That's how we got here. Now, what we do about it is a different question. We have the opportunity to do something about it on November 8th, start to do something about it. And central to that is obviously the economic climate. But before that is people's physical safety. You're either providing it or you're not. And if you're not, then everything else is subordinated to that. We have one, at least one identifiable intelligent life form on the Lake County Board. He's Dick Barr. He's a Lake County Board member. He said this to his fellow board members about this resolution they took up and passed.
What we're doing here is virtue signaling and pandering, and will have zero effect and will make nobody safer.
At least somebody is speaking truth and sense and is willing to do so. So good for Dick Barr, whichever district he represents. Congratulations. You've got one of the
smart ones,
the last remaining intelligent life forms representing you on the county board. By contrast, here's Angelo Kyle. This doesn't make any sense what you're about to hear, but you're going to hear it for that reason. Angelo Kyle is a Lake County board member.
We find that people of color are usually victims of gun violence in huge rates, probably much larger than any other community in the county.
Wow. Can we hear that again?
What the hell are you talking about?
Oh, my gosh.
What does that have to do with banning some sport rifles? He has no idea. He's just repeating some blather he heard from some other dope on MSNBC or from Nancy Rotering running around or from Brad Schneider or some other nitwit. I mean, is there any standard? All these educated people in the suburbs that I always am, told about our community, educated. Oh, so smart. Great schools. Great schools and smart people. And Angelo Kyle is one of your board members. And you got a majority board, perhaps supermajority board, at least on this resolution, that does exactly what board member Dick Barr said they were doing. Look at me. Look at us. Don't care about impact. It's staggering to listen to complete inanity. He might as well have been, talking about professional football. That's how relevant his comments were to this issue. Community caller. It's what sort of Kamala Harris does. Just string words together. Yeah. It doesn't really matter in which order you use them because there's no particular point. It's just sort of, hitting keys. Remarkable. Oh, and by the way, since we're on the topic of guns, a good piece by our friend John Lott about the use of guns to prevent crime by ordinary citizens. And how the FBI undercounts armed citizen responders, particularly in mass shooting situations. They undercount the instances like what occurred in Greenwood, Indiana, when Eli Dickin stopped that shooter in that mall. Undercount by a factor of three. So in point of fact, as he details in his piece, John Lott, the FBI reported that 4.4% of active shooter incidents were thwarted by armed citizens. His Crime Prevention Research Center finds the number is actually closer to 15%. So, almost a factor of four. He writes, two factors explain this discrepancy. One is misclassified shootings, and two is overlooked incidents. For example, on the misclassified shootings, the December 29th, 2019 attack on a West Freeway Church of Christ in Texas that left two men dead did not list the incident as an incident of civic engagement because the perpetrator was shot by a parishioner who had volunteered to provide security during the worship. Jack Wilson, you may remember, was his name. But he's not a security professional. Jack Wilson also said 19 to 20 members of the congregation were armed that day. They didn't even keep track of who was carrying a concealed weapon. That was not civic engagement because he was volunteering to be security. No, it was an armed citizen stopping a predator, a mass shooter. And then they misidentified another 25 incidents identified by Lott where the active shooters were thwarted by armed civilians. You can go to realclearinvestigations.com to get the full piece, but it's really interesting. And it's important because, all the headlines that came out of the Greenwood, Indiana mall shooting where that Eli Dickin stopped that shooter heroically, after we could decide whether or not he was a good Samaritan or not. That was the first. But then it was, you know, it's very, very rare. Rarely
right,
happens.
This ever happens. Yep.
And in point of fact, it happens quite often, and thankfully it does, because every time it does, lives are saved. And if John Lott's number is more accurate, rather than this being a particularly anomalous event, one in six is not that anomalous. In fact, it's an important number, and perhaps if more people were prepared and trained, like Eli Dickin was, we could see that number go up, and hopefully mass shootings go down, mass shooting attempts go down as a result. Maybe that's a more productive discussion than these nitwits up in Lake County are having to make themselves feel good about themselves. Mary Kay, Western Springs.
Hi. You know, Dan, if we had enough, hi, Amy, if we had enough people in the burbs to compete with the union blacks in the city, you know, we could maybe take out a Kim Fox, but we're not all that smart, Dan, you know.
I'm aware of this. I mean, but you have the Lake County Board, DuPage County Board, yeah. Democrat control. So who's winning the day when you have these communities that tout themselves as having these wonderful schools that do a great job mm-hmm. of educating children? And this is why we stay, and we're so smart, and we make right. $250,000, yeah. and we know everything. I'm and so sick of listening to that right. and then watching the governance.
I absolutely agree with you 100%. I sometimes wish I had never, ever lived where I lived or bought where I bought, because we're just getting, you know what's happening. We're screwed, you know, and I tell everybody we're screwed. People are sick of listening to me, but yeah, spare me the great schools too. They're great until the teachers get tired of teaching your kids, and then they retire, and then they're fine. Whatever, they make $1 million and go off to Michigan and live on the beach.
Yeah, or they're great until, you know, you see some kid yeah. beat up another girl, yeah. and then Lyons Township yeah. goes quiet, and so does Western Springs exactly. Police Department go quiet on everybody because you don't want to discipline yeah. based on race.
100%. Now, on my block, I got to say, the state's attorney guy lives near me. He, you know, retired 30 years, hates Kim Fox. We put Kim Fox, you know, don't vote for Kim Fox signs all over our particular neighborhood. A lot of people, former attorneys, you know, they're like, this is just a bunch of BS. The woman has got to go. I, you know, if it's more beneficial to be a criminal in this state than be an upstanding citizen, then that's where it is to me. Gosh, I'm in the city today, and I'm telling you, I'm nervous, mm-hmm. driving down Irving Park Road. It's supposed to be a safe neighborhood. I don't care. I would, yeah, no.
All right.
Nervous.
All right. Be yeah. safe out there. Take Thanks care, for guys. The call, Mary Kay. Appreciate it. What does the fuck say?
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.